some more verses about suffering. I'm going to read texts 22 through 27. This is Kapila Dev, the Supreme Personality, Godhead, Incarnation, describing, just as he's described in precise, elaborate detail, the whole Sankhya philosophy. He's now going to describe what a living entity's experience is at the time of birth. So the set series of verses we ended yesterday is the prayers in clear consciousness or pure consciousness or Krishna consciousness. But kind of circumstantial, because as the circumstance changes, he forgets. Like we might forget it. That's kind of the theme of this little section. It's how Prabhupada ends the purport of text 27. So here's some tribulation description. Lord Kapila continued, the 10-month-old living entity has these desires, even while in the womb, but while he thus extols the Lord, the wind that helps parturition propels him forth with his face turned downward so that he may be born. I'm not familiar with that word, parturition. Like the process of birth. Yes? Parturition. P-A-R-T-U-R-I-T-I-O-N. Parturition. That isn't word for word either. Okay, so. Text 23. Pushed downward all of a sudden by the wind, the child comes out with great trouble, head downward, breathless, and deprived of memory due to severe agony. Blanks out. Purport, the word Krishtrena means with great difficulty. When the child comes out of the abdomen through the narrow passage due to pressure, there the breathing system completely stops, and due to agony the child loses his memory. Sometimes the trouble is so severe that the child comes out dead or almost dead. One can imagine what the pangs of birth are like. The child remained for 10 months in that horrible condition within the abdomen, and at the end of 10 months he is forcibly pushed out. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord points out that a person who is serious about advancement in spiritual consciousness should always consider the four pangs of birth, death, disease, and old age. The materialist advances in many ways, but he is unable to stop these four principles of suffering inherent in material existence. Text 24. The child thus falls on the ground, smeared with stool and blood, and plays just like a worm generated from the stool. He loses his superior knowledge and cries under the spell of Maya. Text 25. After coming out of the abdomen, the child is given to the care of persons who are unable to understand what he wants, and thus he is nursed by such persons. Unable to refuse whatever is given to him, he falls into undesirable circumstances. Purport. Within the abdomen of the mother, the nourishment of the child was being carried on by nature's own arrangement. The atmosphere within the abdomen was not at all pleasing, but as far as the child's feeding was concerned, it was being properly done by the laws of nature. But when coming out of the abdomen, the child falls into a different atmosphere. He wants to eat one thing, but something else is given to him because no one knows his actual demand and he cannot refuse the undesirables given to him. Sometimes the child cries for the mother's breast, but because the nurse thinks that it is due to pain within his stomach that he is crying, she supplies him some bitter medicine. The child does not want it, but he cannot refuse it. He is put in very awkward circumstances, and the suffering continues. Not a pretty picture. Text 26. Laid down on a foul bed, infested with sweat and germs, the poor child is incapable of scratching his body to get relief from his itching sensation, to say nothing of sitting up, standing, or even moving. Purport. It should be noted that the child is born crying and suffering. After birth, the same suffering continues, and he cries because he is disturbed by the germs in his foul bed, which is contaminated by his urine and stool. The poor child continues to cry. He is unable to take any remedial measure for his relief. Even if the bed is not infested like this, the point still remains. Whatever the sensations are, can't communicate, can't do anything. Help us. And text 27. In his helpless condition, gnats, mosquitoes, bugs, and other germs bite the baby, whose skin is tender, just as smaller worms bite a big worm. The child, deprived of his wisdom, cries bitterly. Purport. The word vigata jnanam Vigata means deprived of. Vigata jnanam means that the spiritual knowledge which the child developed in the abdomen is already lost to the spell of Maya. Owing to various kinds of disturbances and to being out of the abdomen, the child cannot remember what he was thinking of for his salvation. It is assumed that even if a person acquires some spiritually uplifting knowledge, circumstantially, he is prone to forget it. Not only children, but also elderly persons should be very careful to protect their sense of Krishna consciousness and avoid unfavorable circumstances so that they may not forget their prime duty. So there's the summary remark of that infancy experience, birth. He gets a little older, the next verse, and then the next verse. It goes through the phases of life. To do a refresh, this is all continued dialogue or monologue description of the consequence of neglecting devotional service. So there's two full chapters describing devotional service, and then there's the warning. Don't forget devotional service. It's something like, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. And that's the principle. So if one forgets Krishna, then one engages in fruitive activities. And then there's a whole chapter of what that's like from beginning to end. Adverse fruitive activities. And then if one dies in that condition of neglecting devotional service and engaging in fruitive activities, then comes this chapter. What's the experience like within the womb for that living entity? and now hearing, coming out of the womb with that experience. The picture is not rosy, purposefully. In one sense, one could say, well, it's not really that bad. But it's really that bad. Kapila Dev isn't just doing a scare tactic. As mothers know what the experience is of giving birth to a child, the child forgets it's so painful, what the experience is of being born. And it's celebrated. Oh, what a wonderful event. Child is born. Poor child. A couple of things that this Prabhupada made reference to, one of the words in one of the verses, and that's this Krishna. Pushed downward all of a sudden by the wind, the child comes out, Krishna, with great trouble, with great difficulty. So severe, they forget everything. They black out. Or their in the final verse we read, 27, their knowledge is taken away or depleted or deprived. Just the pain is so great and the influence of Maya is so great combined, they just forget. It's something like what Prabhupada says about taking birth of a lower species. One would not be able, consciousness must be sufficiently dull to be born in the lower species, because one would just not be able, if with human consciousness, to endure what that experience is. You'd faint. So consciousness must be covered. The consciousness of being standing as a tree. Now they're conscious. The spirit soul within the body of a tree or plant is conscious. Studies have shown consciousness is there. They respond to things. They respond to emotion. They respond to sound. Consciousness is there, but very, very guarded. So the part of the message here is the pain. The adult, the mother of the child, may not just completely forget that consciousness because of the trauma of, or the pain of giving birth to a child, but the child, the indication here is, forgets. And these are that very special child that was Krishna conscious within the womb. So this word Krishna, there's a very nice verse from Canto 10, Chapter 2. And that's, you want to look it up, it's text 32. In Chapter 2 of Canto 10 is the demigods praying to Krishna, who is within the womb of Devaki. So they come into the prison cell and they're somehow mystically hovering about, offering their prayers. A similar thing happens when Sachi is pregnant. She hears these sounds, murmuring sounds. She tells her husband, I something very mystical is happening here. But it's the demigods offering prayers. So one of those prayers, text 32, is Arunya Krishna Padam Padam Tada Padam Yudho Nagara Yusha Andraya. Prabhupada would quote this over and over. Yin Yirmidaksha Vimukta Mani, that's how it starts. vimukti, vimukta, maninas. Mukti means liberation, and manina means within the mind. There are persons who just imagine themselves to be liberated. Those who are aspiring transcendentalists, who don't want to surrender to Krishna, but they want out. So they imagine themselves to be mukti, or liberated. And they may reach some elevated state by the Krishna, by the very severe austerities that they perform. Severe austerities. Detached, for the purpose of which is to detach themselves from the external circumstances. Severe. Yogis will try to do this sometimes. And withdraw their consciousness, withdraw their consciousness, withdraw their consciousness, withdraw their consciousness, so that they can attain liberation. According to this prayer, Lord Brahma speaking, Lord Brahma says they think themselves liberated, but they're not. And after some time, they again fall down because their intelligence, abhishudha, buddhihi. Buddhi means intelligence, and shudha means pure, and abhishudha means impure. Their intelligence is still impure. So, back to this third canto section. We heard yesterday about the state of this living entity has come to the condition of pure consciousness, or clear consciousness, or proper intelligence. Suhrida Atmanaiva was the term yesterday's verse, where in the translation Prabhupada calls it clear consciousness. In the word for word, in the purport, it's friendly intelligence, or Suhrida Atmanaiva, the spiritual intelligence. Same as buddhi. So buddhi is something that comes from Krishna, and Krishna gives to one who takes full shelter of him, but if that taking full shelter of him is withdrawn, then so is buddhi, spiritual intelligence. And then there's another kind, the material intelligence kind, where the material intelligence assists the mind and the senses to find sense gratification. So, buddhi, spiritual intelligence, is extremely important. So important that Prabhupada practically equates them, buddhi yoga and bhakti yoga. So, bhakti has a special meaning. It's more than devotion, it's service with love or devotion. Not just a feeling, it's activity. Bhakti. And activity that's just for Krishna is directed by spiritual intelligence. So buddhi yoga and bhakti yoga. The particular meaning is precise, but they're essentially the same thing. You don't have pure devotional service without buddhi yoga or spiritual intelligence. You'll have, with spiritual intelligence, you'll have pure devotional service. So when that spiritual intelligence is withdrawn or is covered by Maya, because of the pain of birth and the circumstances, the frustrating circumstances where, again, one identifies with the body and the doting of the family members and so forth and so on. Maya covers the living entity, and spiritual intelligence is forgotten. So here's the translation, this 10.2.32. Prabhupada adds a little clause at the beginning, in brackets. Someone may say that aside from devotees, who always seek shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. There are those who are not devotees, but have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? In answer to this question, Lord Brahma and the other demigods said, O Lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities, that's Arunya Kuchitrena, severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated. Their intelligence is impure. So although they may seek like that, their intelligence is impure. So how do you get pure intelligence? Krishna gives it. Or you bring your intelligence and your mind and your everything in contact with the Supreme Pure and it becomes pure. Either way you want to look at it. They fall down, patankyata, they fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. Param padam tata patantyato. So, Krishna's lotus feet are very important. Besides, you know, they're attractive. This is every part of Krishna is attractive. But the implication is the mood of humility in approaching the Supreme Person with the desire to serve and please. The theme just repeats itself. It's a nice theme. Loving service at the lotus feet of Krishna. Just as the first and second cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are the lotus feet of the literary form of the personality of God itself. With that understanding, by absorbing one's consciousness in the first canto, second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you're at Krishna's lotus feet. You're at Krishna's lotus feet. You assimilate the message and you're at Krishna's lotus feet, and that message is loving service in the mood of humility and wishing to please Him. That's the lotus feet, and then pure intelligence is given by Krishna. He says, right in Bhagavad Gita, the Dhammi will be open, Dhammi and Ma will be antite. How to come to Him in whatever the circumstances of life are. So Prabhupada, the concluding message, not just the child that leaves the womb, but adults, mature persons who have some sense of Krishna consciousness, must be very wary of the Maya and continually seek the shelter in the humble mood of Krishna's mercy and Krishna's service in ways that are pleasing to Krishna. Then one's pure consciousness is protected. And then it's beyond salvation, it's eternal life with Krishna. The Bhagavatam's message is very consistent, just in different poetic ways, and historical narrations are just describing it. Very, very pleasing subject matter. So, any discussion?
Often say like serving Krishna's lotus feet, not like Krishna. Is that serving his lotus feet? Is that because is that a way to indicate that Krishna's position is very high and our position is very low?
Yes, that's one of it. There's many features. That's one of them. Yeah. many things to say about it, but just here's a few. Feet are, you know, astronomically the lowest part of the body. So if you touch or take shelter of someone's feet, you're acknowledging that what to speak of the rest of the body. But it's in the prayers of Quinquinti, it Prabhupada mentions in the purport when it's a cultured person sees a superior person, they bow and make this gesture as to touch their feet. It's a sign of submission and humility unto that person. So Krishna would do that when he saw Kunti, because that's his father's sister, Suzanne. So he's respecting her in that way. And she doesn't like that, because she sees him as the personality of Godhead. Makes her uncomfortable. But she accepts it because he's showing, by example, culture. You know, respecting elders is part of any culture. You know, culture is getting eroded, so that's being lost. So the feet is showing respect to the person. I'm down here, you're up there, as you say. And, feet touch dirty places. Like we leave our shoes outside because our feet trample through dirty places, so we don't bring shoes inside home or inside, certainly inside the temple. But Krishna's feet, that's a whole other story. Where Krishna's feet, it sanctifies everything. And then another one that I like is, if you've contacted Krishna's feet, you've contacted Krishna. And, you know, the whole rest of his body is there. In fact, Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vritti Manti, any one of the limbs, Angas in Sanskrit, that when we sing this every time we greet the deity, Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vritti Manti, any one of his limbs serves the purpose of any other limb. Because his Angas are interchangeable, the body is transcendental. You contact Krishna's lotus feet, you contacted Krishna in his fullness. But the mood in approaching him is the mood of humility. And Krishna will sanctify. So we place the dust from the feet of advanced devotees upon our head. Because whatever they walk, they're sanctified by their presence. That's like that. Those are then many other things. Yeah.
We're so dependent on Guru and Krishna to even make a...
We're dependent?
We're so extremely dependent on Guru and Krishna to even make a... seek shelter and protection. That also is dependent on their mercy alone. By ourselves...
Well, the good news is Krishna and Guru are merciful. You can count on that. That's not a variable. The variable is from our side. It does depend on it. But it's invariable. They're merciful. Does that address your question? So we don't have to worry. Are they going to be merciful? We speak like that. Please be... You know, please show me your mercy. But that's more opening our heart than, like, they're holding back their mercy. Can you please stop holding back your mercy? Not so. The sun shines. We don't have to ask. My dear son, could you please shine?
My question is not on their side. My question is on more on my side. As in, if for a conditioned soul to, like, ask or... seek shelter or always be protected. It's not in the control of that soul.
It's not under the control of...
So, because...
Well, wait a minute. The free will choice is yours. Don't abdicate yourself. The free will choice.
My question was slightly a follow-up to something you said yesterday regarding familiarity. And you mentioned at one point that you know, we keep the deities at a level higher,
yes,
with respect to that.
Yes.
So if we don't do that, that's bad.
Yes. Well, the pujari has to, you know, touch the deity.
Right. I mean, because my deity at home is like actually lower level, but.
But the pujari can't address the deity from the lower level. The pujari, your question last night was, when there's closeness of dealings, you use the word intimacy in dealings, because intimacy even is in terms of friendship. It's just, so how do I not transgress and go on the wrong side of closeness of a relationship with Guru Krishna? And the answer was respect. So one of the ways to create respect is distance and height. So the spiritual master sits on a seat. You know, and for the purpose of, we're down the floor, we're looking up. But that's, so what if you're the personal servant of the spiritual master? Then, you know, it's not always like that. It's more intimate, it's more casual, it's more informal. So how do I protect myself? That was your question. And the answer is respect. So when that quality of respect is there, there can be that closeness, and respect doesn't go away. So the offense, we heard it several times from yesterday evening's class, not to see the spiritual master as an ordinary person. Well, why not? Because, you know, they're born and da da da. They eat and they sleep and etc. They do things that we do. So what's the difference? So one needs to philosophically and from the heart recognize what is the spiritual, what makes a spiritual master, and not forget it due to closeness. So that's the respect. And then there are formal behaviors that support that and can cause transgression if we're neglectful. You know, some do's and do nots. This really comes down to a condition of heart. Along with the philosophy, guided by the philosophy. Respect. And it's true in any relationship. You don't know a person, you can have a friendly exchange with that person, and then, if you spend more time with that person, familiarity can come, and then familiarity, you know their idiosyncrasies and their strengths and their weaknesses, and start, you know, the mind starts going like a fly to a sword. This happens when there's closeness, so don't get close. That's one solution. Or remain, see transcendentally. See, here's a person who, like me, is covered in a material body, but they're very special amongst all souls. They're trying to become clean and pure. They're applying the bhakti process to do so. See that? And then support the becoming clean program by your friendship and your loving exchanges. So you put your, using, street language, you drop your guard, you're not careful. And it's really easy to be familiar with persons you become close to. And then become an offender of that person instead of a friend of that person. said, same with the spiritual master, same with the deity, same with the Bhagavatam. You know, so we don't put the Bhagavatam on the floor. It's like the certain things that we do and don't do.
Maharaj, I have this question that is not related to our today's topic, but
it's off topic.
It's off topic.
I'm used to it. Go ahead.
When we follow spiritual master's instruction and apply it, we can feel the presence of spiritual master, and our affection towards spiritual master gets stronger.
Good. However,
my question is that, so that's what we feel, but how about from spiritual master's side? Like, will the spiritual master feel more affection towards that person, or it's just like a one-way feeling, or like the spiritual master will love that person more somehow?
Well, yes and no. Is it yes in the sense that affection is natural, and no in the sense that affection goes to everyone? Prabhupada gives this example of a parent, mother or father, that have many children, and they have affection for all their children. Affectionate mother and father have affection for all their children. But amongst the large family, one of the children is particularly fond of and affectionate to mother and father. So affection actually goes. They're affectionate to everyone, to all the children. It's natural. It's not unnatural. We're going to find this in Queen Kunti's prayers this weekend, where she says similar. It seems it's contradictory behavior, where it seems that Krishna shows partiality to the Pandavas, and he admonishes those who are against the Pandavas. Seems partiality. But he's impartial. He has affection for everyone. He's simply reciprocating with their regard for him, and their regard for him has something to do with their regard for those who are dear to Krishna. So it looks like partiality, but he's not. He's just reciprocating with them. And so some persons he seems like the example commonly given is a judge, high court judge. Some person he awards some money, another person he awards punishment. So it looks like he's partial. You're partial for that guy. You're against the other guy. But so the partiality looks like, but it's not. But then on the other hand, it is. On the other hand, it is. Krishna, you remember from the Japa retreat that the prayers of Lord Brahma. So after the prayers of, beautiful prayers of Lord Brahma, what does Krishna do? Nothing. He's completely silent. He didn't say anything. Didn't say Hari Bol or anything. Why? He wants to go back with the cowherd boys. He enjoys the affection and love of the exchange with the cowherd boys, where they see him as equal. They climb on his shoulders and wrestle with him and play with him. That's puzzling. That's contradictory. He's impartial, but it looks like he's partial. Lord Brahma's a pure devotee. And the coward boys are pure devotees, and Krishna has particular affection for the cowherd boys because they have a particular affection for him. So it looks like partiality. It's puzzling. Queen Kunti speaks about it, and I'm going to be speaking about it this weekend. It's part of the charm and sweetness of Krishna. In the words of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Krishna is the abode of opposites. And they're reconciled within him. No problem. You're going to hear some more about it. What do you think about that? So the answer to your question is yes and no. There's affection is naturally reciprocated with. One feels affection for one who has affection. It's just natural. Where do we get that tendency? It comes from Krishna. It's just natural. From Bhagavad Gita, Yayatama Prapadyante. Prapadyante means surrender. Yata. As they surrender to me, I reciprocate, Krishna says. So if one comes towards Krishna with affection, or one comes to the spiritual master with affection and service, mood, I wish to apply the instruction, it's very pleasing. Think of a teacher. A teacher has many students. And they wanted a good teacher, they care about their students, they want to pass knowledge on to the students, not just have a job and get some money and go live their life. They care about the students, good teacher. So amongst all the students, one student is particularly interested in zeroing in on what the teacher says and applying what the teacher says. So amongst all the students, that one student has that. Teacher's going to like that student and want to give them some opportunity to hear some more and hear some more. Because, you know, the rest of the students may not even have an interest for them more. Just want to get a grade and get a degree and get a job and live their life. So it's natural. Then you go back the other way, supposing somebody doesn't do that so much. But maybe one of the reasons they don't do that so much is they're struggling with some complication of material entanglement. Like our discussion the other day, supposing someone has been harmed or severely hurt in the course of their life and they're stuck in that emotional space of that hurt. They can't really go to the next step. So you don't feel, oh, I don't have so much affection for that person. I have affection for that person because they're not stuck.
So actually we hear a lot about qualities that Krishna has, and I think even in dealings with devotees and pure devotees and the spiritual master, you see qualities that, I mean, nice spiritual qualities. And well, the thing is that what can we do to cultivate them, because they come from Krishna's mercy and Guru's mercy, so we can't.
How do we cultivate qualities? We see qualities, we appreciate them, we wish for service to Krishna we would have them so we could serve Krishna better. How do we cultivate them? That's your question. There are different ways of answering that, but the way that I like most about answering that is there's 26 characteristics of a pure devotee, and one of them is sarup lakshana, primary characteristic, and the other are marginal or tatastha lakshana. So you focus on the primary or sarup lakshana, and that in Sanskrit is Krishna Eka Sharana. Sharana means surrender. Surrender to Krishna alone. That's number one. Krishna Eka Sharana. And the other 25 follow, they come. So now, do I cultivate those 25 or just hang out and wait for them to come? You cultivate following the first one. That is, when I come before Krishna, I want Krishna to smile. If this is something that makes Krishna smile, so the one is in front and the other one follows the one. Number two follows the number one. So let me cultivate this quality for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. And if you leave out that for the purpose of pleasing Krishna element, then it becomes motive goodness, happiness mixed with pride. I used to have a lesser amount of this quality, now I have a greater amount of this quality because, yay, I did it. I cultivated it. You forget Krishna. So the one comes first and then the others. And read carefully the purport of chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita 8 through 12. In the very first paragraph, same thing is said as what I just said. In the first paragraph, these are items of knowledge, and one amongst them is principle. Abhyabhichari bhakti, undivided devotion to Krishna. And to get undivided devotion to Krishna, there is a phrase, achari vipassana, worship of the spiritual master. So the two go together. One, you know, through the worship of the spiritual master, the affinity for exclusive devotion to Krishna take place, and then the other items of knowledge will follow, the other, because they're qualities. Look at them, they're qualities. Amanet, mama, dambitva, humility and pridelessness, it's a quality. They're nice qualities. They're essential qualities. That's why they're first on the list of items of knowledge. So the other good, so again, now to summarize, put the horse before the cart. And the Krishna Eka Sharana is the horse. Complete surrender to Krishna. That means other things are not what I surrender to. I put Krishna in the center of my surrender. And I can access that through the kindness of my spiritual master. I mean, it's natural for me to be accessing it now because I'm distracted. I'm distracted by Maya. Maya looks interesting. So instead of replace that conditioning of being attracted to Maya with attraction for Krishna through the kindness and mercy of the spiritual master, and serving the spiritual master, worshipping the spiritual master, carrying out the instructions of the spiritual master, then I get that Krishna Ekasharana spirit and stay with that or those two. And then the other qualities will come, but I want to please Krishna and Guru, so I cultivate those qualities for the pleasure of Krishna and Guru. And that understanding is by their mercy is going to happen if it's going to happen. So I do my part, but then I'm dependent upon their mercy. But the good news is they're merciful. Shri Prabhupada.
Yeah, I'm late.